What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Pro Football Insiders here on Pro Football Network Live. Glad you're with us. Glad you're watching wherever you're watching, wherever you're streaming. Hope you and yours had a great holiday and a great Christmas. Had some incredible football, and there has been a lot of news since the last round of games that we need to discuss. Brettiverse, Brett Yarris, normally our co-host, is a bit under the weather today. So we hope he feels better and gets back soon. But for the moment, you're going to be stuck just with me and Arif Hassan, who will be joining us in just a bit. So we hope Brett gets better. But there are a lot of things to discuss around the NFL. And for a Wednesday, we had a lot of news that we need to break in. As promised, Arif Hassan will be joining us, and he joins us now live on the show as we get set to break down what was a very, very busy Wednesday. Arif is still being held captive in his brother's basement. So everything good? We're just checking. Everything's still okay?
Yeah, things are a bit better. I've pleaded with my captors to get me slightly better lighting. This does look a tiny bit better than last time. Please don't check. I think we're good.
All right. So listen, we'll do our regular segments like we always do, but we had a lot of news today that we need to address. Quarterback related, and let's start with the news coming out of Miami that Tua Tagovailoa is indeed in concussion protocol. Teddy Bridgewater is likely to start this Sunday and probably for the foreseeable future with the Miami Dolphins, whatever that future is going to be after the loss Sunday to the Green Bay Packers at home. First of all, let's talk immediately, Arif, about the fact that this is the second time this season that Tua Tagovailoa has found himself in concussion protocol. But let's be honest about it. It's really the third time he suffered a concussion, because technically he wasn't in concussion protocol after the Dolphins beat the Bills early in the season. And then they had the Thursday night game where he got hit by the Bengals and had to leave the field on a cart in a very scary situation. Again, by the letter of the law, he wasn't in concussion protocol after that game. But it was such a bad look for the NFL, the Dolphins, and the Independent Neurological Observer that the NFL and the NFLPA changed the rules. And anybody who displays symptoms like Tua displayed in that win over the Bills is not allowed to return to the game and has to be immediately going into the concussion protocol. He couldn't get off the field on his own. He was stumbling. He fell down. From now on going forward after that, anybody that shows those symptoms will not return to the game like Tua did, and will more than likely not be able to play the following week. So in reality, we're talking about over a 16-week period of time, Arif. He's basically had three concussions. What are the long-term ramifications for Tua? Forget this season for the second, and we'll get into that. What do you think of the long-term ramifications for Tua going forward?
Yeah, I mean, the first player that I think of as sort of, you know, a cautionary tale is Jahvid Best. You remember him with the Lions second round pick. Yeah. Phenomenal running back. It was a really home run of a pick for the Lions. But, you know, he suffered, I believe, a pair of concussions at I want to say UCLA. It was a Pac-12 school. He'll get mad at me. It was Cal.
It was Cal.
He suffered a pair of concussions there, and then he also continued to suffer concussions while in Detroit, and he had to retire early because even though he didn't suffer concussions in quick succession, like it seems like Tua Tagovailoa has, it was enough for him to see his life impacted in a big way. You know, he had trouble remembering things. He had trouble with light, even after he had been cleared by the concussion protocol. It's just this kind of long-term stuff that's really difficult to get away from that affects the way that you interact with the world in every way around you. And so that, I think, is, you know, a cautionary tale. It's not obviously what is definitively going to happen with Tagovailoa. And, you know, this point about the potential for the third concussion not being a second concussion is really well received. There were neurologists who were watching the game that it concluded, this isn't just idle chatter, that it concluded that based off of what they could see, there was a very, very strong likelihood that Tagovailoa suffered a concussion and just didn't get diagnosed within the narrow parameters of what the concussion protocol demands within that particular, you know, confine. That is really alarming. Now, there is something that we have to be concerned about with, you know, it's sometimes called second concussion syndrome. That's inaccurate. Second concussion syndrome is specifically about suffering a concussion while you're already concussed. This is not what that is. But a short-term span of multiple concussions, from my understanding, has a significant impact on the long-term health of your brain in a way that, you know, spreading them out, as it were, over the course of 3-4 years doesn't. It has a really significant impact on the recovery process for your brain. And that worry is really kind of, I think, alarming, not just for, you know, for Dolphins fans or for Mike McDaniel, but, you know, anybody who's just concerned about the health of these players, who's concerned about the long term, you know, capability of Tua to lead a healthy and fulfilling life. So there are pretty big concerns here. Also, I mean, at the other end of the spectrum, there are athletes who suffer multiple concussions that go on to you know, continue to play NFL football and don't suffer, you know, long-term ramifications, you know, down the road that continue to have, you know, everything that, and that's the majority of the cases, right? But it is always this risk where, you know, you've got, you know, these really serious long-term, you know, concerns. And the thing that really, you know, raises alarm bells is that we know that the likelihood of a concussion increases following a concussion. And so it very much seems like there's the possibility that one of the contributing factors is the multiple concussions that Tua probably, you know, we have to be careful with our language, suffered over the course of the season in a short period of time. This is, you know, really damaging stuff.
Yeah. And also, I'd just like to add that I can figure, excuse me one second. I'm fine. That was for everybody. Okay, we're good. The other thing we need to talk about here is that, you know, just go back as far as look at Luke Kuechly. You know, I had Luke on the podcast, Half Forgotten History, this fall. And, you know, I said, did you retire because you were done with football? He said, no, I wanted to play. I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, he had to leave because of concussions. My longtime teammate at ESPN, Merrill Hodge, you know, almost died when he suffered a concussion playing for the Chicago Bears. And I can remember years, and I'm talking years after that whenever we would go to commercial break, he would say, can we turn down the lights? Can we just turn down the lights in here during the commercial break so they're not bright? Like, he dealt with that, I want to say, 10 to 15 years after his playing career ended. So there are serious long-term health concerns for Tua going forward, which the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel said override everything. But here's my question, and I don't think you have the answer to it, but this is a question that I think needs to be asked. After the first time, the independent neurological observer was fired because that was a game in Miami, so they had to bring in somebody new. So you have that issue. Then we have the Thursday night game where both the NFL and the NFLPA were reviewing whether or not all the protocols were followed. And before that review was finalized, they let him play, which was an insane thing to do on a short week. And we saw what happened right before the end of the half there, where he had that massive hit and had to be taken off the field. So you've had that as the Dolphins, right? Mm-hmm. My question to the organization, forget the NFL. The NFL and the independent neurological, they have their own things they need to answer to. Here's my question to Miami, because the NFL has 32 things to worry about. The independent neurological observer has everybody to worry about. This is your franchise. This is your franchise quarterback. How did you miss it again? Like, forget the idea of the independent observer. How do the Miami Dolphins, I want to know, and maybe they do, and the guy just missed it. How do they not have someone whose sole job it is to watch Tua Tagovailoa and say, hold on a minute, because this is the guy that you've given the keys to the franchise, and he responded when you give him these weapons like Tyreek and Jalen Waddle and Raheem Mostert and Wilson and you know, Teron Armstead to help him on the offensive line. You believe in this guy so much, you surround him with everything. You've already seen this happen twice this year. How do you miss it? How does the organization of the Miami Dolphins not be more acutely aware of what they need to do to protect this guy?
Yeah, no, that's an enormous question. And it's really difficult to kind of like get good answers to this sort of thing, because when you ask, say, an oppressor, Mike McDaniel is saying all the right things, of course, right? You know, he's talking about how important it is to care about Tua as a human, how important it is, you know, to treat this as independent of a football issue. And that's all true. But the question is, you know, kind of to the best of our ability to determine the impact of your actions, right? You know, what we can see is that there was not any particular care given for Tagovailoa, even though, you know, we know that he is likely at an increased risk of having these sorts of things happen. And, you know, people were really quick to identify when the hit occurred, right? You know, when it was announced
right
that
before the end of the first half.
Yeah, exactly. When it was announced that he was in the concussion protocol, immediately I saw videos, you know, isolating what was the likely cause of it. It was all the same video. It wasn't a different, you know, moment in time. And there were people saying, yeah, I took this video when I was at the stadium because I was really concerned, you know, and, you know, it was pretty obvious to people at the time, people who are not trained to watch this, people who are just, you know, either casual fans or not watching for the purpose of looking for concussions, that don't have a vested interest or an economic stake in Tua's health. You know, they were able to notice it right away. Casual observers were able to figure out kind of, hey, this is the hit. You know, I was kind of worried about it. I'm kind of surprised nothing happened. And you should be surprised, right? I mean, there's obviously, you know, like you said, the independent neurologist, you know, the spotter should have done something, right? But, you know, isolating that, just talking about the Miami Dolphins, the Dolphins should have done something. This is, you know, a critical part, you know, both as an economic investment and also their kind of human obligation to Tua, right? You know, in kind of making sure, you know, they put him out there, they have an obligation to make sure that he's protected to the best of their capability. They don't do that. They fail that obligation. And they fail to protect their economic investment. Both of those kind of tell us that this is an area where the Dolphins definitely failed. And it's not, you know, berating the Dolphins for preventing a concussion. It's very difficult to do that, although, again, you know, there is an increased likelihood in this scenario. But rather, when it happened, you know, they didn't pull him aside, put him in the blue tent or anything like that. They just hoped that the independent spotter would take care of everything. And, of course, they had a game to win. So,
yeah, no, what you just said to me is the whole point. Look, the NFL has their protocols and the independent neurologist. This is your baby, for lack of a better term. This is your guy. And you, as an organization, need to do a better job protecting that investment. And for your benefit and his benefit, that's the part I have a problem with. You know, when it happened after the Thursday night game, you know, Mike McDaniel, that press conference was not great for him after the loss to the Bengals. It was in no way, shape, or form the shining moment of Mike McDaniel's rookie year as a head coach in the NFL. And I think he's learned from that. But again, I would ask the Dolphins organization, why did you not see what everyone else saw? We all, and that, you know, it's so easy. People are like, oh, well, he threw those three crazy, horrible fourth quarter interceptions. I even heard one former player, I'm not going to say his name because he works in a pretty prominent position now. He actually tweeted, Tua's got to be shaving points with how bad those throws are, which is just an awful thing to say, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But it speaks to how bad those throws were. And now it seems to make all the sense in the world, because when he threw them, you're like, well, what are you thinking? Clearly, he didn't have the ability to think. He didn't have the ability to process information correctly. So again, I'm not letting anyone off the hook. But if you're the Dolphins organization, you have to do a better job of protecting the thing that you believe is going to be the biggest benefit to you being a very good football team for a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, especially given that the Dolphins are very comfortable in their backup quarterback situation, you think they'd even have an even larger reason to try and pull Tua out of there against, you know, it's a non-conference game. It means a little bit less in the standings. You're not going to get the top seed in the AFC. You want to win the game, but you have good backups. I mean, you know, you were confident enough in Skylar Thompson to have him after a full week of practice start. You're confident in Teddy Bridgewater. You know that, you know, maybe they're not as good as your starter, but that's the whole point of having a strong backup room. And they're very comfortable with who they have. If they're that comfortable with who they have, you know, they should make sure that they, like, even if, when we separate kind of this human element from it, you know, they should, you know, make sure that they can win as many possible games, not just now, but as possible going forward. And that backup quarterback room, this is exactly why, you know, you paid all that money to Bridgewater. This is exactly why you spent a pick on Skylar Thompson. You want to make sure that you've got that capability available to you. And they did, and they didn't use it.
Yeah. So again, that's my biggest concern going forward. I think the Miami Dolphins as an organization really need to take a look in the mirror and figure out how they're going to be better at this. By the way, we'll get into what that loss to Miami means for the Dolphins and their playoff chances a little bit down the road in our next segment. But we also had huge news today out of Las Vegas that Derek Carr is benched for the remainder of the season, and the Raiders are going with Jared Stidham. And Carr has actually left the team with the Raiders' permission so as not to be a distraction, which is a very convenient excuse.
Oh, yeah.
We absolutely don't want you to be a distraction. Distraction, Derek, so get the hell out of here. I have a lot of things that I want to get off my chest about that one. First of all, you know, the old Josh McDaniel line is, well, you know, we want to evaluate these other players, blah, 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 blah. Give me a break. Okay, your playoff hopes are slim at this point, like extremely slim. You have just punted on the season. Okay, Chandler Jones is on IR, and now you're going with Jared Stidham for the last two games of the regular season that you absolutely have to win and have to have a million other things go your way if you want to even think about getting the postseason. Here's where I remind everybody who the Raiders' final two games of the season are against: San Francisco and Kansas City. And Jared Stidham is going to lead the way. There's an old movie from the 80s starring Andrew McCarthy and Jamie Gertz and a very young Robert Downey Jr. called Less Than Zero. Those are the chances of Jared Stidham leading the Raiders to success against the San Francisco 49ers and the Chiefs, who in all likelihood will have everything on the line, including the possibility of the number one seed and the bye when they meet at Allegiant Stadium in week 18.
Yeah, this is just kind of stunning news. I mean, first of all, you know, it's a big referendum on what Josh McDaniels has been capable of doing, in Las Vegas. You know, the fact that, you know, you take this quarterback that had been playing pretty well under a previous head coach in John Gruden, you take him, you're supposed to be this offensive genius, you're able to get some good stuff done in your return to New England. You screw the Colts. There's no other way to put it. You screw the Colts because you think you can get a better job. Yeah. And this is the result. This is what you were able to put together. You ended up benching your $38 million cap hit. That's ridiculous. Now, obviously, you know, Derek Carr is on the trade block. There's a really big question mark already heading into this week about whether or not Derek Carr would be on the team. You know, colleague of ours, Ian Wharton, had actually published something on Christmas Eve saying that the Raiders should trade Derek Carr. You know, this is foreseeable stuff. Great article, by the way. You should check it out. But this is like really catastrophically bad. I mean, I know that the Raiders have had injuries at receiver with Hunter Renfro, at tight end with Darren Waller over the course of the season. I know that it took a little bit of while to get Devontae Adams online. Kind of that first game was pretty good, but it is a pretty, you throw it in the white flag, right? You throw it in the towel. That you don't have, you know, the goods to be able to compete. I mean, I don't know that McDaniels can do better. The last time he was able to pick a quarterback, it was Tim Tebow. You know, I don't know that he'll be able to hand select the guy that he needs in order to run this offense while still being able to maintain all of the responsibilities that are required of him as a head coach. I think that, you know, it's pretty clear that Derek Carr is gone. It's pretty clear that the Raiders need to kind of have a discussion about what to do at quarterback going forward.
Well, listen, I have a crazy theory about where they could go, and we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, I'm going to use Less Than Zero as a second reference point here. Those are the same odds of him being on the team in 2023, which is insane if you think about it. They signed him to that contract this offseason. They bring in Devontae Adams, who, you know, finally started to click after a slow start.
He's called his teammate, by the way.
First game. Yeah, exactly. They go back to Fresno State. This is an organizational failure again for me, because is it Derek Carr's fault? That was harder to say than I anticipated. Is it Derek Carr's fault that Darren Waller has basically been non-existent the entire season and been on injured reserve, one of the arguably top three, at worst, four tight ends in all of football? Is it Derek Carr's fault that Hunter Renfro, who inexplicably makes all these catches that no one thinks he should make when you look at him physically, that he's been gone for a majority of the season? I don't think in his tenure, the Raiders, Derek Carr's tenure, that is, the Raiders have ever had a defense in the top half of the league. I'm not saying Derek Carr is Patrick Mahomes or even Justin Herbert. He's not. But he is a hell of a lot better at a quarterback play than I think a lot of people, including those folks in the Raider organization, think he is. So this is clear to me that he is being scapegoated. Does he have the league-leading 14 interceptions? Yes, three of those came Saturday night in Pittsburgh in very difficult circumstances. So I understand that. But it's not like he's been trash, okay? And just looks to me like they're finding a way to divert the attention while they realize this team has just completely underperformed.
Oh, yeah, and we've seen Derek Carr perform well for long stretches of play before this. If there is a substantial drop-off in Carr's play, you know, it's more likely that it's the product of the coaching and the supporting cast than it is Carr himself just suddenly, you know, getting worse at quarterback. I mean, he's a talented quarterback. You know, John Gruden was finally able to get him to trust his rocket arm, be able to throw it downfield, and it worked out really well. You know, the fact that, you know, you had this successful formula on film, in front of you, in the Raiders film room, you know, and not be able to find ways to replicate it again. Like you said, you know, that you don't have Darren Waller, you don't have a lot of, you know, snaps with Hunter Renfro available to you. So you can't replicate, you know, exactly the same thing. But you brought in Devontae Adams for a reason, right? And for you to not to be able to use that to generate, you know, some points on offense is, like you said, it's an organizational failure, right? You know, their inability to kind of convert, you know, these opportunities into wins. I mean, they lost against the Colts. You know, I know that, like, I know that they were
they
still
let Baker Mayfield, who had been on the Rams for all of 2 days, lead a game-winning touchdown with under 2 minutes to play with no timeouts inside his own 5-yard line. Okay?
Just
like to me, if you ask me, if you Google and say, Siri, what is the lasting image of the Raiders 2022 season? It's the punter doing the throat slash on the punt going out of bounds and the two gunners doing the gritty as they watch the ball go out of bounds at the two, and then see Baker Mayfield march down the field to steal a win for them. Like the Raiders last four games, if you think about it, have been insane. They've had these two ridiculous – they had those five games. They had the two walk-off overtime wins. Then they blow that game. Then they have the Chandler Jones win, and then they find a way to blow it against the Steelers. Like, it's been the last five games of the Raiders season have been absolutely nuts. And to your point about Josh McDaniels, let me just say this. When John Gruden was fired for non-football reasons, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be fired, but they had nothing to do with the way the team was performing. Mm-hmm. Rich Bisaccia took over and held that team together. Yeah. They became the first team in NFL history to fire a head coach midseason and make the postseason. And then people forget, in that wild card game in Cincinnati last year, there was the inadvertent whistle on a touchdown that probably shouldn't have counted. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the game, they were inside the 10-yard line and just couldn't punch it across. They were that close to being the team that would move on to take on the Tennessee Titans in the divisional round, and they didn't even get Bisaccia a chance to keep that job. They couldn't wait to get McDaniels in there. All I'm saying is sometimes what you have might be better than what you think you can bring in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I'm happy that Bisaccia, you know, I think he's in Green Bay now, right? You know, his ability to kind of figure out, hey, you know, we probably should have moved on from Amari Rodgers sooner, but this Keyshawn Nixon guy, he might be the best returner in the NFL. Yeah. I'm happy that he was able to get that going for him, because that special teams unit was looking pretty dicey for a little while, and Bisaccia definitely deserves, you know, as many positive opportunities as he can get, because you're right, he did a phenomenal job. He was right there. He's in the building. The players like him, right?
They loved him.
This is kind of the underrated thing about special teams coaches and why they should get more opportunities, just kind of generally speaking. They interact
with
everybody.
That's such a good point. That is such a good – say it again. I stepped over you. Say that again.
Yeah, they interact with everybody. Special teams coaches deserve more opportunities to get the head coaching job. And Joe Judge kind of ruined it for a lot of them.
Yes, he did. But John Harbaugh didn't.
Exactly.
But to your point, like, special team guys have to work with both offensive and defensive players. That gives them a huge advantage, I think, in how to handle a team instead of worrying about, you know, my side of the ball or the other side of the ball. And before
and
we move on
to be
the
more
other...
sensitive to game situation, too, I think.
Correct. You have to be. You have to be.
Exactly. So I think that they're better when it comes to game management as well.
Yeah. Now, before we move on, because we spent far too long on this, even though they were huge topics and we had to address them, let me just throw out my crazy theory. Okay. Josh McDaniels' heyday was as an offensive coordinator or an offensive coach with the New England Patriots.
QB for QB trade. I got you, baby.
Tom Brady has already said he's not retiring. He's going to figure out what his next step is. And there's a third factor in this. Rob Gronkowski tweeted out last week, I'm bored. Right? And he has said, I'm not playing in 2022, but I have not ruled out playing in 2023. Now, if I'm the Raiders, okay, and I get it. This is I'm asking the Raiders to think logically, so I'm not sure they're going to go down this road. But, hey, Tom, how do you feel about putting the band back together, right? We have your favorite offensive coach of all time. We have Devontae Adams. What if we added Gronk to Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow? It's like that line from Entourage. Would that be something you might be interested in? You know, and Gronk has said on more than
who ran the best two tight end offense of all time? Josh McDaniels.
Tom Brady.
Yeah. Hey, Tom Brady, Josh McDaniels.
Josh McDaniels.
Aaron Hernandez.
I don't think it's crazy. Like, I don't think it's a crazy scenario. And, you know, Gronk has said on more than one occasion, I only will catch passes from Tom Brady. Like, he nixed the trade to Detroit when they were going to ship him off to be with Matt Patricia. He said, I'll retire because I'm only catching passes from Tom Brady. I'm just saying, don't be, you know, shocked.
I love it.
If in early 2023, you're like, wait, what? You heard it here.
This is one of the only ways both franchises can get out of their brutal cap situations regarding the quarterback, especially, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because if they don't have to take on the other quarterbacks, it's basically, you know, very similar when it comes to 2023 cap hit. So,
correct.
Kind of works.
Just put a pin in that one is all I'm saying. All right, just put a pin in that one. All right. Now that we've taken almost up half the show with the two biggest stories, which, by the way, were incredible, we need to do our other segments here. And it starts with time to learn. Teams that we do believe in, do we doubt, or do we need more? And let's start with a team that punched their ticket Monday night into the postseason. The Chargers and Justin Herbert get a win over the Indianapolis Colts. Although I have to say, it wasn't the most impressive win. It was not. I mean, it was 13-3 late in the game. And if my buddy, who I love, Jeff Saturday, just kicks the damn field goal, it's a one-score game. 13-6 in the fourth quarter. They opted to go for it. They didn't get it. And then it all fell apart from there. So do you believe in the Chargers? Do you doubt them? Or do you need to see more?
Boy, I mean, if you ask me if I believed in Justin Herbert, yeah, absolutely.
Correct.
But that's not the question.
That's a no-brainer. A no-brainer.
I will say this. It has been a while since the Chargers have had a non-compelling win. For me, it's been a lot of compelling losses, as it were. Oh, wow, this team looks really good. Shame they couldn't get the W. The other way around has been a nice, I think, a change for the Chargers, but it is hard for me to believe in them. Now, they have been getting a little bit better on defense kind of every week. You know, Brandon Staley has been able to get that unit together to be what it looks like. You know, they've been getting some good weeks, not every good week, but some good weeks from Khalil Mack. They've been able to get, you know, all of this stuff kind of put together a little bit. But man, it is tough for me, especially you take a look at the AFC. Obviously, there are some teams kind of at the bottom end there that don't really convince you, but that's not who they'll be playing against, right? The top of this AFC is just too good. It is just too good. You know, they have answers to everything. If you're stale as an offense or as a defense, they'll figure it out and take advantage of it, because the way a lot of these top offenses work, the way the Bengals work, the way the Bills work, the way the Chiefs definitely work, is that they have found a way to be both explosive and consistent. And that's how you score points. That's just it. There's no other solution. There's no other formula. And if you don't work with that thin margin of error and don't find a way to keep up, you're out. All it takes is just a couple of things to take out, you know, some of these teams and put, you know, the Chiefs or the Bills or the Bengals on the right track to overwhelm you. And if you don't have a game, like, you know, the Bengals had this crazy game with the Patriots, of course, where, you know, weird holding penalties that are called, these weird fumbles, the fumble gets called back. You know, this game that clearly was not an issue of the Bengals' quality late in the game, but rather just an unusual set of circumstances. You know, if you don't have that working for you, you don't have anything. And the Chargers are just, they're really interesting on paper. I really like a lot of their players, but they just don't have the goods to keep up.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to need to see way more. And look, I still don't believe, but I don't know if I trust Brandon Staley as a head coach in a big moment.
Yeah,
just being honest in that situation. Yeah. I know the players love him, but I'm not sure I can sort of say, yep, I know that guy's going to make the right situational game decision. So I'm with you on there. All right, let's move on to our second team, the San Francisco 49ers. They're on an 8-game winning streak. And Arif, they have, to me, the most incredible stat of the entire 2022 NFL season. And it's this. There's not a single team that's won a game the week after they played the 49ers.
Yeah,
not
I saw
a
that.
Single team. Teams that play the 49ers the next week are 0-13. The only team to win their next game after playing the 49ers, the Kansas City Chiefs, but they had a bye week, okay? And even after the bye week, they needed to go to overtime against a Malik Willis-led Tennessee Titans team to find a way to win, which is a really simple way of saying the 49ers beat the crap out of you on offense as well as defense. You know, you get Trent Williams and that running game going, they're amazing. So how much do you believe in San Francisco, even though they've played three different quarterbacks and they have an 8-game winning streak?
This one's so hard for me, right? Because obviously that's the best defense in the NFL right now. It is, especially, you know, the Broncos trading away, you know, Bradley Chubb, you know, the Dallas Cowboys kind of faltering the past couple of weeks. This is far and away the best defense in the NFL. And, you know, Shanahan knows how to get the most out of every single piece that he has available to it. You know, if there's blood in that stone, he's squeezing it out. But It's tough. It's tough. This is a quarterback league. Your job is to be the best quarterback on the field, especially in the playoffs. It's tough for me to believe that Brock Purdy is going to be that guy. He has played well. He has had some really great moments, but it's very clear that the offense is limited in a lot of ways. And the thing is, there's just kind of more when it comes to tailoring your defense or your offense specifically to what your opponent does with regards to film study. And there's going to be a lot more that's going to be done to kind of reveal, you know, Purdy's weaknesses. You know, maybe the team that plays the 49ers is going to lose in the divisional round, right? But that's not it. The question is whether or not the 49ers will advance. And that to me is really tough. I would love to be wrong. I love these kinds of stories. But, you know, in order for these stories to be good, it has to be improbable. And it is tough for me to throw my weight behind the guy that was picked last in the draft.
Yeah, well, I totally get that. But I have a – this is why I believe, because I think when push comes to shove, as soon as Jimmy is healthy, they're putting him back in the lineup. And if he's available in any way, shape,
or
form
in the, you know, all bets are off.
In the postseason, they're taking him, right? Because, you know, this is a team that 3 years ago won an NFC title game throwing it eight times. They passed the ball eight times in that win over the Green Bay Packers. And that was supposed to be Aaron Rodgers' revenge game. You know, he was going to take it out on the team that didn't take him in the draft and all that kind of stuff. And it was in Northern California. And they threw it eight times and absolutely hammered Green Bay in that game. Look, the 49ers, to me, are the only team in the NFL that says this: hey, quarterback, don't F it up. Right. Every other team says, okay, we need you to win these games for us. You know, Patrick, Justin, Josh, Joey B. Hey, we need you to do this for us. Okay. We need you to be there for us. We need you to make the plays. The 49ers say, just don't mess it up. We have a great defense. They're 8-0 since Christian McCaffrey became a starter, 8-1 with him there. Again, the only loss was the short week when he was there in Kansas City. They will manufacture ways to be effective on offense. And this is why I believe, because I think if Jimmy G is even remotely healthy, they go back to him. Not only did they take him to Super Bowl 54, they had a 10-point lead on the Rams in the NFC Championship game last year. And if Jaquiski Tartt doesn't drop an arm punt from Matthew Stafford, I mean an arm punt over the middle of the field, when they had a 10-point lead, that interception probably sends them to their second Super Bowl in 3 years with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback. So I believe, with the caveat that if they get into the postseason, Jimmy G is going to be able to return to the team, and I think they'll be fine. That's sort of the way I'm layering my thought there.
I think that makes a ton of sense. My concern with Jimmy is just when you put him in, it's kind of like Kirk Cousins, right? When you put him in situational football, and hey, Cousins got a lot better at this year, but when you put him in situations where the only option is to throw the ball, and the option is to throw the ball kind of downfield into the sideline, Is he going to be able to kind of pull you in? Because you're talking about, hey, they had all these leads, they were in all these great places. And in order to kind of maintain those leads or get back from behind, in order for those one score games to actualize into wins, you need your quarterback to do things that only quarterbacks can do. It's something that your defense can't, they cannot lead a game winning drive for you. They can give you the ball. You know, maybe they'll get a pick six, but you can't count on that, right? So that is my one concern. But I think in a world where Jimmy Garoppolo is that quarterback, I think everything I said kind of goes out the window, right? I like Purdy a lot. I like Jimmy a lot more. He's not nature's quarterback. He's not the perfect quarterback, but he's the quarterback for them.
Yeah, 100%. Like they know what they can do with Jimmy Garoppolo. Like they've seen the resume. So we'll see what happens there. And then believe or doubt or need more. Now we have the Miami Dolphins without Tua this week, and I think probably without him for the season finale. Like, I don't know if there's a doctor anywhere that would look at the pattern of concussive behavior for Tua and say, I'm going to put my medical degree on the line. Go get him, big guy.
Yeah, that last guy got fired? Nah, you're not going in.
Fins up. Yeah. I don't see that as a likely scenario. And we're not making fun of the situation. We're just being like, it's preposterous to think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So do you believe, doubt, or need to see more with the Dolphins really hanging on to that seventh spot right now?
Yeah, we talked about guys that can get the most out of their quarterbacks. Mike McDaniel comes right from that Shanahan school, was able to get the most out of Tagovailoa. He's been able to get a lot out of those backup quarterbacks. But I need to see more, right? It's a great supporting cast. Teddy does pretty well with a pretty good supporting cast, but it's not the same. And hey, you know, the scouting report on Teddy is kind of the scouting report about for Tagovailoa going in to this season. So, you know, there is something there to potentially work with and reconfigure. But there's a reason they stuck with their first round pick instead of the backup that they signed on free agency that was available for anybody, right? So I'm going to need to see more, but I am optimistic. How does that sound?
Yeah, I get it. My question is, who are they going to beat, right? Because, or who's going to beat them? Let's put it this way. Let's say they struggle. Do we believe in the Patriots? I don't believe in the Patriots.
Absolutely
because
not.
We've seen back-to-back weeks of them completely fail situational football. The Chandler Jones disaster from Jacoby Myers, and then Ramondre Stevenson, arguably their most consistent offensive weapon.
Oh my gosh.
Fumbles what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with, what, under 2 minutes to play? After being down 22-0, it's 22-18, and they have a chance to take the lead. I don't ever recall, Arif, a Bill Belichick team failing fourth quarter situational football in such spectacular fashion in back-to-back weeks. So I can't count on them. So then it's the Jets. Well, we'll find out this week, right? Because Mike White is back under center. Zach Wilson is inactive. By the way, Zach Wilson also less than zero chance. He's with the New York Jets this 2023. That ship has sailed. It's best for the Jets and it's best for Zach. That kid needs a reboot like a 1974 computer. Like he needs a hard reset to just make sure everything's firing again, because that has nothing to do with talent. It has everything to do with him managing the situation and managing New York. I mean, he came from a small town in Utah, went to BYU, and then his whole sphere of what he was comfortable with changed dramatically, dropping him in New York City. Okay. That's where Zach Wilson has struggled to me, and that's affected his game. So if we doubt the Dolphins, who's taking their spot, I guess is the question I'm trying to get to.
Oh man. So the Dolphins have anywhere between the fifth seed is available to them, I think technically. And then of course they could just be eliminated. Right. I mean, that's within the, I wouldn't have imagined 3 weeks ago. But man, who
they've lost four straight games. They've lost four straight games.
Yeah, who takes their spot? That one's tough. I mean, you know, Baltimore's available. I don't know what the status for Lamar is.
Baltimore may win the division. They still have an opportunity to win the division if they win this week against the Steelers and they beat they beat the Bengals, because they'll have swept the Bengals.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Baltimore or Cincinnati could take, you know, the 5 through 7 spots. You know, the Chargers are locked in, so they may end up, you know, 5 to 7. But after that, you're right. I mean, we're deciding between New England, New York, Pittsburgh, maybe Jacksonville. I'd kind of like to see Trevor in the playoffs, but that is a weird situation.
Well, it's a weird situation for the wild card. It's easy for the AFC South. I mean, both the Titans and Jags could either win by 50 or lose by 50 this week, and it doesn't matter. Whoever wins that Week 18 game is going to be the division champion.
Yeah. Yeah, it is an unusual kind of situation. So, I mean, again, the top of the AFC is fantastic. The bottom of the AFC is really iffy. I don't know that I'll be surprised by anybody who ends up making it. I just know that maybe I don't want to watch that game if I'm scheduling out kind of which playoff games I'm watching.
Yeah, it's like the Bucs-Eagles game last year. Moving on. By the way, let's get these reads in here. Brett will really be angry at me. Don't forget, as we go through on Pro Football Network, make sure you join Pro Football Network on Picket, the best bet tracking app on the market, and it's 100% free. They let you track your return on investment on all of your bets, sports books, including automatically syncing with my favorite, Caesars Sportsbook. It should be your favorite too, for a variety of reasons that I don't feel like I need to go into right now. Join Picket today using the promo code PFN365 to win up to $100 just for downloading the app. Okay, we're moving on to what's called segment 2 in the rundown, but we took an extended dance mix version of a different segment, segment 1. So this is really segment 3, the problem with teams in the postseason with a losing record. Possibility exists that we could have two division winners with losing records, okay? Both in the South, the AFC South and the NFC South, both teams could get in with a losing record. Where are you on your feelings on a team with a losing record not only making the postseason, but both of these teams would host a postseason game?
Okay, so I don't like it, obviously. I don't think anyone likes it. But in terms of, like, you know, restructuring the way that the playoffs work, I don't love it. I think it's just something that you kind of have to deal with. Maybe changing out who gets to host. Sure, fine. I'm comfortable with that. But, you know, I really like the division setup. I really like being forced to win your division in order to, you know, in order to get, you know, a good spot in the playoffs. I like the rivalries that happen as a result of it. I don't like taking meaning out of these games between teams that have been rivals for like 30, 40 years, and that rivalry is built on the high stakes that come with winning the division. So yeah, you could win the division with a losing record. That's kind of weird. The thing is, if the NFL keeps on adding more games and they're non-divisional games, you water down the importance of those divisional games. You make it more likely that a team with a losing record is going to make it. Now, this is just one more game added onto the season. That's not the sole reason that we're here, but it is absolutely the case that when you have more than six, you know, non-divisional games, you end up making these non-divisional records matter a lot more. So that's an inevitable result of you know, season expansion, which I'm already against. This is kind of like another, you know, area, but I don't know if I'd kick these teams out of the playoffs. Certainly I'd absolutely entertain the discussion that, yeah, I don't know, man, the second seed in the AFC East probably deserves it way more than the top seed out of the AFC South. But man, I hate taking out, you know, the importance of that divisional win.
Well, I completely agree with you. And here's my answer to whether or not the NFL, because that's what has to happen. The NFL will have to say, hey, we need to do this. You know, it's like the Electoral College. It'll get changed on the 12th of never. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the NFL is ever going to acquiesce to reseeding going into the postseason, because they believe, it is their longstanding belief, like you said, winning your division should matter. It may not be your fault if everybody's lousy. You just need to be less lousy than everybody else. It's like if you're being chased by a crocodile. You don't need to be the fastest guy. You just need to be not the slowest guy, okay? Like, that's the scale, and the NFL loves that. And the NFL loves the idea of giving that division winner not only a playoff game, but a home game. I mean, there have only been three times in NFL history when a team with a losing record has made the postseason. Most recently, it was the 2020 Washington football team. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, they gave the Bucs and Tom Brady, who went on to win the Super Bowl that year, all they could handle in that game. And then the 2014 Panthers went 7-8-1. And I think they won a playoff game too. I'm double checking here real quick. I think they won a playoff game that year. They won the wild card game against the Cardinals, then lost the divisional round to the Seahawks.
Wait, so that makes the losers 2-1, right? Because the Seahawks.
Correct. the Seahawks knocked out the freaking Saints as defending Super Bowl champs in the 2010 postseason. So two of the three times.
That has to be one of the most iconic wild card games ever, right? Because the Minneapolis Miracle was a divisional game, so you can't even count that.
Yes, exactly right.
Wow. The Beast Quake.
Two out of the three actually won. So I don't think it's ever going. I understand why you're upset. Like, I get it, but it's never changing. Now, it would be really wild if, like I said, we've had three in the history of the NFL and we have two make it this year. That would be crazy. It might generate some discussion, but I don't think it's going to ever generate enough discussion or heat to change the format.
Yeah, I mean, you think about some of the most memorable. You ask a fan of their favorite team what are their most memorable games, and most of them will be divisional games, right? Yeah. And it's because those divisional games matter. It's because those rivals were built up, you know, because they matter. And, you know, sometimes it's geographic proximity. That's what the NFC North is about. Sometimes it's not. The NFC East is one of the strongest set of rivalries that we have, and one of them's in Texas. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you know, ask a Phillies fan what they think about a Dallas fan, and you'll be lucky to walk out with your face the same shape. I mean, it's fantastic stuff. So, I would not want to take the stakes out of that. And I don't think the NFL does either.
I don't. And I agree with you. Now, again, if two make it, maybe they have a little more of a conversation. But at that point, it's just a conversation. All right, this segment was brought to you by Caesars. Again, I've mentioned my fondness for Caesars Sportsbook for a variety of reasons, and we're happy to be working with Caesars here at Pro Football Network. Place your first wager for Caesars, and if you lose, you get 100% of your stake back as a free bet up to $1,250. And win or lose, you also get 1,000 reward credits and tier credits from Caesar Rewards. Redeem this offer using promo code PFNCZR. All right, let's get into our final segment of the week, which is our Super Smash QB matchup of the week. Let's see what we have in store. So we have a rematch of week one in the NFC North in this matchup. Week one, the Vikings beat the Green Bay Packers 23-7. That game is probably most remembered by anybody in Green Bay for the drop that Christian Watson had. I think it was on their first play from scrimmage, right? Which
was on the first touchdown. Drive. It might have been the second. It might have been the first play. I should remember better.
Yeah,
I was.
It was
there,
close. But, yeah. It was, and you know, it's wide open touchdown, and we're like, well, that's going to be the problem for the Packers all year. They figured out the Watson thing. He's fine, but the Green Bay Packers are now officially a problem. Right? They've strung together some wins, and there's a very realistic scenario for them to get into the postseason. The Vikings are essentially locked into the two seed. Yes, it still exists ethereally that somehow they could get the number one, but I just don't see that as it playing out. So what do we expect to be the way this game plays out, and how much do you put into the fact that this game is at home and under Matt LaFleur in December? In home division games, the Packers have been very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said about the Packers' recent stretch of play. I think, importantly, that defense is actually looking a lot like how good they're supposed to be on paper. You take a look at all of those players that you line up on that defense, and you look at the defensive performance, you wonder what the disconnect is there. There still is a bit of a disconnect, but they are playing a little bit better. But the most important thing, obviously, is how Aaron Rodgers is playing, what his chemistry is with his receivers, how well, you know, they're working out. The hand signals thing, I guess, is being kind of resolved as we speak. You know, his ability to kind of, you know, hit Christian Watson, make sure that Watson is doing everything that he needs to do, making sure that, you know, the chemistry with Romeo Doubs, who I think is going to be back this week, is up to par. I mean, that's two good rookies that you have the ability to work with for a long time that are already producing for you right now. That said, you take a look over the past 3 weeks. I mean, who are they playing? They played the Rams. They played the Bears. They played a Dolphins team that where the quarterback was throwing three picks in the fourth quarter that don't make any sense and are not. I don't think any of us agree that were caused by the defense, right?
Correct.
You know, these were just absurd. And so it's really difficult for me to say that they beat any teams of the kind of quality that you'd expect, you know, somebody who's threatening, you know, the division winner in an individual game to have. That said, Vegas favors them for a reason, right? There is a reason that the Packers have -3. That's not just home field advantage. That is much smaller in 2022 than it was in, say, 2017. So there's something there. I think that, you know, having all of that kind of cohere together at kind of the right time is a big part of it. I might still take the Vikings.
Yeah, look, it's interesting, right? There are a couple of numbers. You mentioned the spread, either 3.5, where it is right now. I think it's 3.5 at Caesars. The Vikings are great as favorites. They are not good as underdogs. They're 1-6 in their last seven, 1-6 straight up and against the spread in their last seven games when they're getting points. Now, the other thing to consider here is that for whatever reason, Kirk Cousins has figured out the Green Bay Packers. The last three times Kirk has played and Aaron has played, because there was a game in there where one of them didn't play.
Yeah.
They're 3-0, the Vikings are, against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And we should point out that no team has ever beaten, and no quarterback has ever beaten Aaron Rodgers in four consecutive matchups. I mentioned the division home thing. I want to get that straight. It's not just December. Under Matt LaFleur, the Packers are 9-1 straight up and 8-2 against the spread in division games at Lambeau Field under LaFleur. And in those 10 contests, Rodgers has 26 touchdown passes with just one interception. So what in your situation, what's more likely to hold this incredible streak of close wins, one win games, 11 consecutive one win games for the Minnesota Vikings, or the home field advantage that Aaron Rodgers and company seem to have at Lambeau when playing divisional foes?
I think so. I'm a huge kind of, I've been getting a lot of heat from Vikings Twitter about how much I don't believe in their ability to consistently pull out close games. And of course the heat is ratcheted up as they continue winning these close games, but I'll hold my own. You know, I think that, you know, there's something to be said about making sure that you close out games and make sure that they're not close in the first place. There's something very serious to be said about, you know, teams that win well. Right. And that's, I think, a really important element of it. That said, you take a look over the past three games, the past six games, the ones that you would point to say that the Packers have a big advantage. I mean, the Vikings have played pretty well. You take a look at some of the defenses they've played, you know, a pretty good Patriots defense, a very good Jets defense. You know, they've, but you know, that Colts defense is all right, you know, especially with they've got a cornerback. You know, they've put together, you know, some pretty high scoring drives. And over the past 3 weeks, you know, when we're supposed to be talking about the Packers, you know, Kirk Cousins has outperformed Aaron Rodgers in EPA per play. Both of them are having their best stretches of play right now. The best game I've ever seen from Kirk Cousins was just a couple of weeks ago. Like it's really phenomenal what he's been able to do. Both quarterbacks were struggling at the beginning of the season. Both of them were pretty rocky. And then over the last 6 weeks, both of them have played a lot better. And over the past 3 weeks, they've played even better than that. And each time you take a look at these splits, whether it's EPA per play or just in yards per attempt or whatever advanced statistic you want to use, the Vikings are playing better at quarterback than the Packers are, and against defenses that scare me a little bit more than the ones the Packers have been playing. And so I don't think that, you know, Vegas is wrong about the way that they break down these games. They win for a reason. They make money for a reason. I just think here, you know, the Vikings have, you know, the advantage of knowing how to beat the Packers defense. Joe Barry has not really changed very much about the way the defense fundamentally operates. I don't think the Packers have an answer for Justin Jefferson. And the Vikings defense has learned how to blitz. Someone opened up you know, this magical playbook where you send rushers that are not on the defensive line, and it's been
crazy working. Talk.
It's wild. They've been playing man coverage. Mm. It's a whole new look Vikings defense, and over these past 2 weeks, it's looked pretty good.
Yeah, the only problem is they do have that 32nd ranked pass defense, but we don't know what the temperature is going to be like and how much that's going to affect what we might see from either of these games. Okay, we got one more QB smash up. We got to get to. Let's get to it right now. Okay, I could not be more jazzed for this final Monday night regular season game. Cincinnati welcomes in the Buffalo Bills. It is Josh Allen against Joe Burrow, the first ever meeting in the career of these two quarterbacks, and it couldn't come at a better time. Buffalo's on a 6-game winning streak. Cincinnati is riding a 7-game winning streak, and the Bills are slight 1-point favorites on the road. And I got to say, look, you're right. The casinos are big and shiny in Vegas for a reason. I don't see how the Bills are favored in this game. Like I've been saying for weeks here and other places, the Bills right now, the Bengals' best is better than anybody's best. I think there's going to be a very tough task for the Buffalo Bills to walk into the jungle and walk out with a win.
I get it. I understand. The Bengals, I think, have been playing a little bit better on defense, too. So there's something to be said here. But I think that Josh Allen has just been playing better at quarterback all season and in the past couple of weeks. Again, you take a look at these advanced analytics, you take a look at kind of who they've been playing. And I think that you kind of have to give the edge to Josh Allen. That is not a slight to Joe Burrow, who has been playing lights out since the second half of the season began. You know, he is the way that they have figured out the offensive line pass protection issues, which, by the way, there's still a talent gap there on that offensive line. They're just pushing through it. They're just finding ways to score regardless. Really great schematic, changes in the way that they run that offense. And a credit to Zach Taylor, who I've criticized a lot, and I just want to give him credit there for how they've been able to do that. Josh Allen has just been a beast, even when, you know, those receivers haven't always been there for him. Even when, you know, when Stephon Diggs is covered, you know, you're not getting as much out of Gabe Davis as you want, Isaiah McKenzie as much as you want. Seeing Isaiah Rodgers do well elsewhere must be kind of frustrating. But, you know, it is pretty good, you know, the way that Bills offense has been running. That defense has not been playing as well as it did at the beginning of the season, and the Cincinnati Bengals defense is on the upswing, but I think the gap there is still pretty tenable. I think that when you take a look at kind of everything that the Bills put together, that improvement in the running game, the fact that Josh Allen's a big part of that running game, the way that that offensive line has the ability to move people in a way that the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line doesn't, the way that that defensive line has the ability to bring pressure, which outside of Trey Hendrickson, the Bengals don't really have much of that. I think that you can make a really good case as to why the Bills are favored. But I totally get where you're coming from, and I hope people don't read too much into the end of that Patriots game because it has nothing to do with how good the Bengals are.
Exactly right. And look, the running game for the Bengals, though, like Samaje Perine might have jumped Joe Mixon when he went out with that concussion. He's been absolutely phenomenal. When the Bengals have all their weapons, I'm not sure there's a better team, not only in the AFC, but in football. And here's what's crazy about it. Depending on the outcome of this game, either the Chiefs, the Bengals,
right,
or the Bills could be the 1 seed, the 2 seed, or the 3 seed. But the way this thing falls, if for some reason the Bengals end their 7-game winning streak and drop 2 in a row, they're the 5 seed. Like we know the Bills are going to have won their division. We know Kansas City has won their division. There is a possibility, and it's a little, it's not faint. It's not strong, but it's not weak that they could find a way to lose two in a row and then have to go the wild card, which they did last year, and I'm sure they'd be fine with it. But at this point, if they can taste the possibility of getting the number one seed, it's just crazy how much is on the line for all of these teams, depending on the outcome of this game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think if the Bengals beat the Bills, that gives the Chiefs the one seed, right? Which yeah. means that the...
And then they just have to beat Jared Stidham.
So in that world, right, where the Chiefs have the one seed, I think that they would need to see the Chiefs lose in Week 18. Seems kind of unlikely. And the Bengals would end up having to win. Seems kind of likely. In order for them to take the one seed, it would be kind of tough for them to grab that one seed. But this is kind of where you take it. This is how, you know, you yeah. kind of figure out ways to get, you know, figure out ways to get that bye. That bye is so important. Not only is it a free win, you get some rest. Right. You get some rest and, you know,
the Bengals are beat up right now. I mean, the Bengals yeah. are, I mean, like you said, they're yeah. dealing with a lot of the Lael Collins situation. You mentioned Hendrickson and his issues. We've had some of the receivers banged up. Like, the Bengals could really use that yeah. week if they can find a way to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I think more than most teams. Right. So it's going to mean a lot. I'm going to love watching this game. I really love how explosive these quarterbacks are. I love how big these offenses are. I will say, you know, the Bills, you know, I talked about how these all three of these AFC offenses are explosive and consistent, something you only find usually once a year instead of three times a year. A little bit more consistent the way that they operate is the Bills offense. That just a little bit more. And I think that has more to do with the Bengals injury issues that they have. I think it has more to do with kind of these strange, like, how often does, you know, Jamar Chase fumble, right? Like, you know, right. these kind of unusual situations, but a little bit more consistent. I don't know, man. It's tough for me to pick, you know, the best team out of all these, especially if they're fully healthy. If they're fully healthy, does that mean they get Von Miller back? Right. I don't know. But it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be fascinating. Just a couple of things about this game real quick. Josh Allen enters this game 11-3 in his first 14 games as a primetime starting quarterback. If he wins Monday night in the jungle, he would be only the fourth quarterback in the Super Bowl era to start with 12 wins out of his first 15 primetime games. And it's a really interesting mixed bag of the other quarterbacks. Donovan McNabb, Tony Romo, and Russell Wilson are the only other ones. But the Bengals have been on an historic cover streak. And, you know, if they're 1 point underdog, a cover is basically a tie or a win.
Yeah.
Right. They have yeah. covered 13 of 14 games within a season. That's never happened before. And Cincinnati has active cover streaks of 7 overall, 9 against non-division teams, and 5 at home. Those are all the longest cover streaks in the NFL right now. So there's so many sort of permutations and mutations of this game. It's going to be really, really fun. By the way, make sure you spice up your fantasy football season with Underdog Fantasy. Take the higher or lower on any offensive player stat projection and get up to a $100 deposit bonus when you use the promo code PFN at sign up. Arif, that'll do it for this week. Hope you're well. Hope everything is good. Safe travels whenever you're leaving your brother's basement and get back to your studio. And hopefully Brett will be healthy and able to join us next week. Until that time, thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is a ton of fun.